And you're listening to Earth First Radio from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the stories you'll hear tonight, the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information, they all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to hear, because this is not couch potato radio. It's activist environmental radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods up in a tripod or a tree sit or locked down at the road blockade like they are up at Eagle Creek tonight. Of course, Earth First Radio can use your help if you have announcements or news about what's going on in your bioregion. Send it by email to cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. Or if you have to send mail, send it to P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. And activists from across the southeast blockaded the entrance to the Willamette Industries' newly opened chip mill last week in Union Mills, North Carolina, according to a press release from Heartwood, Catua, Earth First, and Earth Culture. Chip mills promote clear-cutting of forests, fragment wildlife habitat, reduce biodiversity, and degrade water quality. Sawmills cutting timber for North Carolina's furniture industry use one-tenth the wood a chip mill does and employ 7 to 8 times as many people, said Rick Spencer of Earth Culture. If you'd like more information, contact Devin Shurable of Heartwood. He is number 573-449-3537. That's 573-449-3537. Or mail to Devin, D-E-V-I-N, at Heartwood.org. That's Devin at Heartwood.org. From Kentucky, we hear that the Forest Service is planning to trade Roberts Bend on the wild shoreline of Lake Cumberland in Kentucky to a development company in exchange for scattered lands that include logged areas and old mining sites, says Kentucky Heartwood. Roberts Bend includes pristine endangered species habitat, while the land to be acquired would require $78,000 of taxpayer-funded restoration. Please contact Mike Rock, U.S. Forest Service, Somerset District, 135 Realty Lane, Somerset, Kentucky, 42501. That address for your comments is to Mike Rock, U.S. Forest Service, Somerset District, 135 Realty Lane, Somerset, Kentucky, 42501, before the public comment period ends on June 9th, and say no land swap. And for more information, contact Heartwood. Their phone number, 812-337-8898. That's 812-337-8898. And scientists studying songbirds in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park of Virginia found a greater abundance and diversity of birds in old-growth forests than in forests that were logged 70 to 100 years ago, according to the park's guidebook. The results surprised the North Carolina State University researchers, who expected that the greater rate of plant growth in the younger forest would mean more birds. Instead, it appears that the diversity in the habitat provided by old-growth forests is more favorable to birds. Smoky Mountain National Park contains some of the largest tracts of old-growth forest in the East. If you'd like more information, contact Jim Benzman at jbenzman at EZL.com. That's Jay Benzman, J-B-E-N-S-M-A-N, at EZL.com. And forests of giant genetically engineered trees are being planned in a development which ecologists fear will threaten entire ecosystems. Pulp and paper companies have teamed up with the world's leading biotechnology firms to alter trees genetically to make them grow faster, pulp more easily, and give them resistance to pests. But the drive to create designer trees has caused alarm among environmentalists who fear it could cause irreparable damage to the plants, insects, and animals that rely on trees to survive. They say if logging companies create custom-made trees, the world's forests could be disrupted along with the complex ecosystems they sustain. They also fear the new genetically modified traits such as herbicide resistance will spread to natural trees, creating hybrids. In a nightmarish vision of the future, they warn that trees engineered to grow faster could crossbreed with their ordinary relatives, creating enormous trees which would block out the sun, suck up huge amounts of water, and damage houses with their giant roots. Several patents on genetically modifying the structure of trees have been recently filed, and multi-million-dollar joint ventures are already being forged between logging companies and agrochemical firms. Last month, Monsanto signed a $60 million joint venture with International Paper, Westvaco Corporation, and Fletcher Challenge Forests to genetically engineer faster-growing trees with improved fiber quality. In Britain, the first test site of genetically engineered poplar trees has been planted near Bracknell, Berkshire, by biotechnology company Zeneca. The EU-funded experiment is designed to create a species that will produce cleaner paper. The genetically modified trees are female, so they cannot breed with neighboring species. But environmentalists fear that because trees take up to 100 years to mature, it will be impossible to conduct proper tests to predict any effects on the environment. The Forestry Commission, the government's ruling body in United Kingdom woodlands, has been experimenting with engineering the genes in Sitka spruce to make the pine resistant to pests and diseases, but the commission has warned that genetically modified organisms should not be used in forestry in the United Kingdom until they have been properly tested. And early in May, the Center for Biological Diversity officially notified the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that it will file suit to force the agency to designate critical habitat for 12 endangered species. The Endangered Species Act requires that, with a few exceptions, every federally listed species be granted specific critical habitat areas which are protected from destruction and degradation. Unfortunately, the agency never designates such protected areas except under court order because of intense political pressure to allow continued logging development, mining, grazing, and water diversions, regardless of the effect on threatened and endangered species. The species being filed suit to designate critical habitat are the San Clemente loggerhead shrike in California, San Clemente sage sparrow, the El Segundo blue butterfly, island night lizard, the Monterey spine flower, the robust spine flower, the bay checkerspot butterfly, and in Oregon, the Lost River sucker, the short-nosed sucker, the white sturgeon on the Kootenai of Idaho and Montana, Hungerford's crawling water beetle in Michigan, and Hind's emerald butterfly in Illinois and Wisconsin. And the timber industry and their allies in local government are undertaking a new initiative to gain control over the management of federal lands. They are hoping to capitalize on the current debate to decouple county payments from timber sales receipts in order to, one, increase the amount of money counties receive, and two, gain greater local control over the management of federal lands, and three, increased logging on those federal lands. The Clinton administration has proposed severing the link between Forest Service timber sales and payments to counties, and that deserves our credit and support. This system pays counties and schools 25% of all timber receipts, encouraging local governments to promote unsustainable logging levels. But the industry has formed the National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition, which has developed this platform, which may be introduced as legislation in the near future. They want to guarantee a safety net payment based on years when timber levels were at their highest level. Logging was at their highest levels. Number two, they would allow counties the option of taking higher payments if timber revenues increase, thus continuing the incentive for overcutting and maintaining the link between the timber industry, local government officials, and local land managers. And three, pay for the guaranteed payments out of the Forest Service non-revenue producing programs such as Fish and Wildlife and Watershed Protection if timber revenues are insufficient. And four, that would establish local and national committees to create forest policy and legislation that would ensure long-term community stability, the sustained yield of forest products, and the maintenance and protection of forest health. Anyway, contact Senator Ron Wyden about his getting together with timber industry champion Senator Larry Craig, and tell him to support the administration's proposal to decouple payments from timber sale receipts, but to drop his plans for introducing a county payments bill with Senator Craig. Senator Wyden can be reached at 202-224-5244. That's area code 202-224-5244. Or if you'd like more information, go to www.americanlands.org/forestweb/county.htm. That's americanlands.org/forestweb/county.htm. The Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission has approved new rules for listing and protection of endangered species in the state of Florida, but the protection of habitat is not in the rules, according to the St. Petersburg Times. The new rules call for a two-step process, which would list a species as a candidate during the first step while a, quote, management plan is developed during the second step. The management plan must take into account the social and economic impacts of protecting the species, and no deadline for writing the management plan would exist. Worse, while the plan is being developed, only intentional killing of a species is prohibited. Lori McDonald, who coordinates the Habitat for Bears campaign for Defenders of Wildlife, warned that habitat protection is necessary or else the species is going to die. The Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission Director Ellen Egbert responded that, quote, expanding protection to include habitat goes just too far. And in a questionnaire for Idaho Fish and Game Commissioner candidates prepared with direct input from sportsman organizations and resource industry groups, asked inappropriate questions according to some of those groups. The questionnaire was designed to give background information on the candidate, but it asked such questions as whether they support grizzly bear reintroduction and wolf reintroduction, and whether authority for endangered species protection should be moved to the governor's office. Russ Biagna, president of the Idaho Wildlife Federation, said candidates whose answers differ from the governor's will not be selected and the candidates should be judged on their qualifications alone. Just by design, those questions are obvious lines in the sand. And in New York, Governor George Pataki has proposed updating the state's list of endangered species, which would be the first changes to the list since 1987. The proposal includes adding 22 species to the endangered list, 23 species to the threatened list, and 40 species to the list of special concern. And in Omaha, Nebraska, the cleanup of ASARCO's lead refinery will not harm the biologically diverse Los Hills, thanks to pressure from grassroots groups around the state. As reported in Wildlines, May 7th edition, ASARCO was planning to move close to a million cubic yards from the Los Hills area. Excuse me, that's a quarter of a million cubic yards from the Los Hills area, the last remnant of Iowa's native prairie, and use it for fill and cap on the old lead refinery grounds. An outcry from environmental community convinced ASARCO to find a different source for the fill. Glenn Pollock of the Los Hills Preservation Society said, "This action is an example where citizens stepped in and took over where local government either overlooked or took no action to prevent the environmental problems." And California's logging rules are inadequate, allowing widespread tree cutting that causes mudslides, hurts water supplies, and endangers fish and wildlife, a federal scientist says. In a study released this week, the U.S. Forest Service geologist Leslie Reed accuses the California Department of Forestry of lax enforcement of the Forest Practices Act, the principal state law governing tree harvesting. Reed urges officials to shift authority over logging rules from the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection to the cabinet-level resources agency, headed by Governor Gray Davis's top environmental advisor. California laws have failed to fully protect Northern California streams, wrote Reed, who played a key role in the state-federal agreement to preserve the Headwaters Forest Preserve near Fortuna. Some CDF staff members see their primary mission as facilitating production of high-quality forest products, she added. And Uncle Dennis can concur. He's heard that straight from their mouth. Back to the story. The study reflects Reed's research and was not endorsed by her agency. Her study was released by an environmental coalition that includes California's major water agencies lobby. It was commissioned by Assemblyman Fred Keeley, a Boulder Creek Democrat who opposes tightening logging law, who proposes tightening logging laws, boosting inspections, and requiring timber companies to pay for it. CDF spokesman Carol Terrell declined to comment on the study, saying agency officials had not yet seen it. Logging practices have been a thorny subject for years along the north coast of California, where landowners have complained that excessive logging causes mudslides during heavy rains. And in December of 1996, overlogging by Pacific Lumber Company was blamed for a mudslide that destroyed homes in Stafford. The company, however, denies the allegation. Basically, it destroyed one-third of the town of Stafford. It took out all the property owners north of me, and this is not an isolated case, said Mike O'Neill, a Stafford property owner whose land was hit by the mudslide. Among supporters of Keeley's legislation is the Association of California Water Agencies, which represents more than 400 water agencies across California, most of whom provide drinking water. And Reed's study suggests that timber harvest plans, the documents the companies seeking to log trees submit for state approval, quote, do not adequately examine the long-term impacts of human activity, namely logging, according to the Environmental Coalition. And roadless areas in Utah are on the chopping block. The Manti La Sal National Forest in Utah has again proposed the South Manti timber sale, despite successive appeals by conservation organizations. The sale is one of the largest in Utah's history and proposes to log 31 million board feet of timber from over 6,500 acres of forest, including 2,500 acres of roadless area. In addition, this timber sale will construct 10 miles of new roads and is expected to lose taxpayers nearly $4 million. For more information, contact Susan Ash, Wild Utah Forest Campaign. Her email address, wufc@xmission.com. That's wufc@xmission.com. Or you can phone her at 801-539-1355. That's 801-539-1355. And Cindy Barkhurst, the Forest Service biologist with over 20 years of experience, has accused her superiors at the Umpqua National Forest of undercutting protections for salmon in order to push through timber sales. Barkhurst wrote a letter to Andy Stahl of Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics that she and other experienced biologists have been replaced with less experienced biologists and non-biologists on a team that is to determine whether logging threatens the Umpqua River Sea Run cutthroat trout and the coho salmon, as mandated by the Endangered Species Act. Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics included the letter in their petition to join the plaintiffs in a lawsuit challenging 24 timber sales on the Umpqua. If you want more information, contact Umpqua Watersheds at francis@teleport.com. That's francis@teleport.com. And Forest Watch in Vermont reports that two recent public surveys completed for Green Mountain and White Mountain National Forests demonstrate that a large majority of citizens want more forest protection and less logging in New England's national forests. The surveys, which were paid for by the Forest Service and conducted by the University of Vermont researchers, found that 94% support protection for all remaining undisturbed unroaded areas, 71% urge management of areas for ecological processes, and 78% oppose emphasizing timber productions on national forests. And the Allegheny National Forest has extended a ban on cutting of standing trees for an undetermined period, according to a press release from activist Bill Belitskas. The moratorium began on April 1st and was expected to expire on May 15th, was put in place by the Forest Service in order to reach compliance with the Endangered Species Act. Quote, formal consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on threatened and endangered species on the Allegheny National Forest has not been concluded with a final biological opinion, according to Forest Supervisor John Palmer. And the John Muir Project recently reported that federal logging programs cost taxpayers $1.2 $6 billion in 1997, the Congressional Research Service reviewed the report, Ending Timber Sales on National Forests, The Facts, of spring 1999, and found that $1.2 billion is a reasonable estimate of the loss to taxpayers, according to the John Muir Project. The report was released to coincide with the reintroduction of the National Forest Protection and Restoration Act. If you want more information, visit their webpage at www.johnmuirproject.org. That's www.johnmuirproject, all one word, .org, or send your email to amy@johnmuirproject.org. That's amy@johnmuirproject.org. And the Snowbird Ski and Summer Resort outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, has begun hauling lift-building equipment into the Mineral Basin for a proposal the Forest Service has not yet completed an environmental impact statement for. The EIS is not expected for at least another month, at which time the public has a chance to appeal. According to Gail Dick, president of the Citizens Committee to Save Our Canyons, this premature action is a slap in the face for the public. For additional information, contact Susan Ash at the Wild Utah Forest Campaign. Her number, 801-539-1355. That's the Wild Utah Forest Campaign at 801-539-1355. Or send your email to wufc@xmission.com. That's wufc@xmission.com. And now we're going to play a commentary by Oak out in the Earth First Radio Network, who sent in this tape of commentary, and this one is about skiing.
Hello, there we are. Okay, for Earth First Radio, this is Oak here, and first piece I'm going to do, which was featured in issue number one of Tree Flesh, is The Revenge of the Trees. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Two recent celebrity skiing accidents involving trees reminds us not only of the laws of physics, but of the prominence of trees in our lives. I'll spare you the laundry list of things our rooted relations provide, though oxygen is a hard one to overlook. Suffice it to say, from the cradle to the grave, trees are there for us. The question is, are we there for them? In the case of Sonny Bono, there seems a certain kind of poetic justice, as cruel as it sounds, to have him slamming into a tree at high speed on a pair of overpriced skis. Bono was no friend of the earth. In fact, his suggestion for dealing with endangered species was to give them all a designated area and then blow it up. Funny guy. However, Mother Earth always gets the last laugh. A similar ironic incident occurred last year, maybe 2 years ago, in St. Marie's, Idaho. It was a convoluted tale of ecological mayhem in which a stand of cottonwood trees was cut with the idea of stabilizing the levee on which they grew. At least, that's how the Army Corps of Engineers saw it. Other agencies and common sense saw it differently. Trees stabilize soil, and in this case, served an important feeding roost for bald eagles and other threatened species. In any case, some foolish logger sent out by the county to cut the trees dropped one of the cottonwoods on himself, and like many a careless logger before him, left this world right along with his victim. I suppose there's a fine line between reporting such moments of irony and actually dancing on the graves of the perpetrators. It is a fuzzy line indeed. Bear in mind, however, that in some Latin American cultures, the dead are not exempt from being objects of scorn. In fact, the remains of adversaries have been known to disappear from their resting place. Enemies of the earth who depart this world will face disgrace regardless of the disposition of the body. Bury them and Gaia will reclaim. Burn them with the same results. It would seem doubly fitting if trees grew from the graves of those two victims, but it really doesn't matter.
And that's commentary by Oak. Oak sent in his cassette on commentary to Earth First Radio, and we thank him for that. Well, that's it for the announcements, news, and commentary today on Earth First Radio. To get news, announcements, or your commentary from your bioregion on Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F at C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. Or you can send those letters or cassette tapes to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so that I have time to get them on the air. If you'd like more information, news, or in-depth commentary about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. They're at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can hear Earth First Radio live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Or you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer at the World Wide Web, radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall.web.net. The 4 is the number 4. You'll need a sound card in the computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced by Earth First Santa Cruz and is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening. Tune in to the next Earth First Radio show for more No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music. And now we're going to listen to another Daryl Cherney classic, this one about some activity that occurred in Santa Cruz.
Now, Earth Day 1990 was Dennis Hayes' vision, but they're keeping us together. It only caused division. He said, turn down your thermostat and recycle toilet paper. And as long as they contribute, don't confront the corporate rapers. There were these griping dissidents holed up in Santa Cruz. They were pondering this problem, smoking joints and drinking booze. They said Earth Day has sold out, thinking they could not get caught. So we've come up with a concept, one we know that can't be bought. We'll have an Earth Night action, yeah, it's a splinter faction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yeah, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. Now some folks said, hey, Santa Cruz just had a big earthquake, and a topple in their power lines was a tactical mistake. The big mountains feeding them their coal, Prince William found their oil. Hey, I'm sorry if their fridge went dead and their TV dinner spoiled. We'll have an Earth Night action, it's instant satisfaction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yes, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. In San Luis Obispo, they've got Diablo Nuke, but the best that they could fight it with were some songs that made me puke. PG&E has gotta go, but it seems so damn complex. But Earth Night has the answer, Diablo Canyon's next. Yeah! We'll have an Earth Night action, it's a felony infraction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yes, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. San Luis Obispo ain't gonna have no lights. L.A. ain't gonna have no lights.
Oh my God.
Houston ain't gonna have no lights. Yeehaw! New York ain't gonna have no lights.
What the fuck?
Gay Paris ain't gonna have no lights. Moscow ain't gonna have no lights.